Titans head coach. He's at the podium right now giving his end-of-season press conference. It's locker room clean-out day at St. Thomas Sports Park, so we go now there live.
Awesome.
Take this team to the next step?
Well, we've won a lot of games. You know, we won, 34 games or whatever we've won in 3 years, but we haven't won a playoff game in 2 years. And that's, that's when you have to be at your best. And I think in, Saturday night, there were glimpses of it, just not consistent enough in all three phases. We will work. And to improve, to make sure that when you do play playoff games, you're at your best and doing everything that we have to do to take care of the football, to tackle, to cover, to be able to convert on third down, and continue to affect their quarterback, and all those things that you saw that were there at times, just not consistent enough.
Ryan and Derek in these two playoff losses in 2 years. Haven't played to the level that they played in the regular season. You consider that the two-game aberration ill-timed or a problem?
Well, probably. We've always said that your best players have to play good in this league for you to win. And then that goes without saying. I've always felt that way, as a player, and especially as a coach. So when you're talking about skill players, especially guys that are responsible for the football, they need everybody. They need everybody around them, to succeed. So I think that's a byproduct of everybody. But your best players have to play good in order for you to win.
That's the season that Todd Downing had for you guys as offensive play caller.
I think Todd does a great job. I think he's a great coach. I think he's a hard worker. There's always going to be calls you'd like to have back. There's plays you'd like to have back. But I don't evaluate things. I try to see how guys communicate with each other, the players. Are we all on the same page? Is there, good communication? How do we do on third down? How do we do in the red zone? And, things have to be better in all three phases each and every year. But, I love the relationship that Todd has with the assistant coaches and the players, and we'll all continue to improve.
What about in terms of the relationship with Ryan? Do you think that Ryan has suffered at all losing Arthur and going to Todd this year?
Arthur coaches for the Falcons.
Transition from Arthur to Todd, though, do you feel like there's any diminishing effect at all?
No.
Your involvement in the offensive part of the team, that phase, did you have the same level as you've had in the past?
I'm the head coach, Teron. I've got operations and got an ability to go into every meeting and talk, and I enjoy those. Enjoy it a lot. So, I wouldn't say that's any more or any less. Is it? Is that something that you've?
That's what I was curious. Like, 'cause I
know that's a part of the game. I think I enjoy. I enjoy being able to again. Try to have input, but also allow coaches to coach. And if there's something that I think that we should do or I want change, then we change it. But I'm also not, an expert at every single scheme or, run game. I know what I'd like to do or say, hey, can we put this in? And then we work to put it in, or, I try to give ideas. But and I enjoy that. I just had to be conscious of how many ideas I give. Because they have to take it to the players and then make sure that it's installed. And again, we've been through the process of what has to happen when you put a bunch of new plays in. You have to be able to block it or be able to have to line up and play it on defense.
What's your final message, Mike, to the team and how difficult it is? Because
I'm obviously proud, Jim, and I take this this opportunity to coach in this league and especially coach this team very seriously. It's an honor. But I am proud because you come to work and you get to coach men that care, that are tough, that play extremely hard, that believe in our culture of effort and toughness, about putting the team first and about winning. And so I'm disappointed, but I'm not discouraged because I know the type of the people that we have here.
How close is this team to winning a Super Bowl?
Right now, not very close.
In a lot of Ryan's interceptions, they seem to come in bunches. Is there anything you can pinpoint as to why that might have happened?
No, I don't know if it's a trend. You know, I mean, I just think that, you know, we understand how great you have to be with the football, whether you're carrying it or throwing it, taking care of it, is paramount. And when you lose the turnover margin in the way that we did at different points along the season, it is really, really hard to win. And that's something that we're going to have to evaluate how we are coaching and just making sure that everybody that has the football knows how important it is to the success of the team.
The disappointment is there with every playoff loss, but talking to some of the guys Saturday, it seemed like they were almost surprised by this one because they all said there was such a focus and intensity last week, and they thought they did everything right to play well. Do you feel the same way? Does that make a loss at this time of year a little bit more head-scratching than maybe last year or the AFC title game 2 years ago?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to win every game that we play. That's my approach. So, I guess that they felt that way. I didn't feel like we, you know, I thought we always had good preparation, good focus. And again, we kept the game and played the game in a manner in which I thought that we needed to, you know, to keep it close. And we, you know, come back, obviously, and kind of felt like our type of game. We really thought we would get a conversion, call timeout, you know, have 23 seconds and one timeout, you know, to execute those situations that we've executed all year and kick a field goal to win, and it didn't happen.
The offensive numbers were obviously down, as you've talked about. How much do you factor injuries into that whole situation when you evaluate it? How important was that? And I guess how important was just
it's a large part of it. I mean, you know, the pass rush looks a little better when Simmons and Autry and Landry and Butter out there. So, as opposed to me, you, Jimmy, and Teresa. So we'll factor in the who's out there. You know, the X's and O's are great. The Jimmys and the Joes are a little better.
I guess, yeah. Offensively, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to factor in who's available, who's out there, what the run game looked like based on how we were blocking, or was it a great cut? Did we not block three guys and somebody make somebody miss? Or was it just a really well-executed play by everybody having the guy blocked, and the one guy we can't block is the post safety, and he made the play 15 yards down the field? Or did the protection break down and, you know, a guy that we were, you know, counted for, you know, just beat us? But then injuries are going to be part of who's out there doing the work as well.
Scored 17 points on opening drives all season. How much is scripting better starts, but maybe an off-season concern or project?
I think that the scripting is as important as the execution.
That Russ said, not right now, not very close to Teresa's question, but you won 12 games.
Well, we're out of the tournament, so the Super Bowl will be next year, and then I'll figure that out when we get there. But right now, we're a long way away because we have no chance to win the Super Bowl.
Projecting forward, I mean, do you like kind of what you have built and feel like
you've got? I think that we've got some guys that I love coming to work, and I would be disappointed if they weren't with us next year. And I love what they're about. I love the how they prepare, how they compete. And I think that what these guys believe in is they believe in the team. They believe in playing a certain brand of football about effort and playing physical and playing together.
Are there priorities in particular, Mike, you know, as you look ahead? I know it's only been 2 days, but priorities that you say, I'd really like to improve this area looking forward?
I think we're probably a little bit too soon for that. You know, I think we're just trying to work through some of the sting of the loss and, you know, get these guys in here today, get them checked out, you know, meet with them. And, you know, then John and I will have, you know, discussions and things as we enter into, you know, free agencies and players that have contracts that are expiring. You know, what the players' plan are to go and try to improve in the offseason.
Do you expect the coaching staff to come back mostly intact for next year?
We'll have meetings on that throughout the week, and, you know, that's some other things I'll have to put into consideration.
Considering the production you've gotten from incoming offensive linemen, will you and John kind of reconsider the process for choosing in the draft and free agency?
I think we're always trying to consider or reconsider or evaluate how we acquire players, whether it's through free agency, whether it's through the draft, and then what we're doing, you know, to develop them. It's a whole process.
What do you think Dylan's future is next year? Where do you want him to be focusing on?
Just improve and continue to do what he did this year and continue to get stronger at this level, continue to work on speed off the football, pad level, everything we'd ask anybody else to work on.
Tackle?
Offensive lineman.
As far as the quarterback situation is concerned, like, what is it about Ryan Tannehill that you feel should make him the quarterback next year and in years beyond?
You got elite toughness. You know, we have to be great around him, but he's shown signs of accuracy, of decision-making, to the ability to extend plays and to scramble and leadership. You know, so those are all things that you look for in a quarterback. And, you know, Ryan showed us that. Unfortunately, we turned the ball over on Saturday.
You overcome so much adversity during the season with the record number of players and Saturday probably your healthiest and your best, and yep, Saturday happened. But how do you explain just the difference in being able to overcome that adversity and then with things never easy, but easier, I guess?
We turned the ball over three times or whatever we did, and, you know, didn't get, you know, got one turnover on defense, gave up big plays, didn't cover kicks very well, had a penalty on special teams. That's kind of how you would explain it, right, Emily? It's like, all the things that we talk about, whether you had injuries or not, those are things that get you beat.
Is there a mindset or a mentality that goes along with that too, or is it just plain and simple execution?
A mindset, like the mind, every time you try to go out on the football field, you know, you're trying to do it with at least most of the guys, I think, I hope, are trying to do it with a physicality and a demeanor and an effort. I've never seen a mindset that wasn't what I felt like it should be. You know, it's, the great thing is when you decide to do this, you have to be willing to understand that when you can do your best and you can work hard and compete, and sometimes you lose, you know, and we made mistakes that forced us to ultimately end this season. But we're not going to second guess. We have to evaluate and make sure that we learn from those mistakes. And that's why I love doing what I do.
Mike,
has special teams shown you any kind of consistent progress, week to week increase?
Yeah, I mean, there are times where we had plenty of tackles inside the 20, had a big return against Pittsburgh. You know, I could go back and, you know, we made a bunch of kicks, missed one or whatever we missed, you know what I mean, at the end of the Jets game, and, you know, we kicked the ball well. It just, you know, I'm not sure, like, we've had plenty of good special teams plays, and, you know, DeNico tipped a field goal or whatever he's done. You know, we just have to, you know, be better in a lot of phases.
Mike,
Chad, we were doing as far as, like, trending to be involved in your off-season program.
There's rehabbing. I mean, I have to get an update from Todd on how it is today, but I see him in there every day, and they're working hard. And, you know, we'll see whenever the off-season program starts. But, you know, those were guys that were working in training camp, started the season, and had injuries. And hopefully they can, you know, take a big step with the rest of these young guys when they're healthy.
Mike, while you remain confident in Ryan as your starter, kind of the team's leader moving forward, would you like to see maybe the quarterback depth be bolstered, maybe someone kind of behind him that can push him? Or
I think we're trying to add the best depth at every position that we possibly can.
As you looked at the film, like of the three picks, did you have any different take on them than you did right after the game? Did you see anything different than when you were talking to us after?
No, I mean, I think it's, we got to do a better job of taking care of the football. They made a couple plays, and, again, we know that when we go out there and throw the football, we got to be precise. The receivers have to help us. Quarterback's got to help us, and that's where it is.
A lot of success with sort of a different offensive strategy than a lot of teams, more run-based. I mean, with the personnel that's returning, do you envision sticking with that theme for the most part? Or
we'll
do
whatever we think gives us the best chance to win right now. Right now we're not there. I mean, we haven't. We'll go back and evaluate every run and look at its efficiency. We'll look at every pass. We'll look at every screen, every bootleg. Same thing on all, defense.
Were things at the right depth? The first pick, the first play. Were things at the right depth, and shouldn't there be some kind of receiving option that pulls Bates towards the middle? It didn't seem like there was anything tempting him.
Yeah, we were away. Trying to max protect, and, again, Bates came over and made a really nice play.
You expect him there to obviously get himself in a position to pick up where he left off when he comes back in camp and just find out anything more on Foreman from what you've seen from him, what you saw from him this year?
I'm sure Derek will work extremely hard to get himself ready like he does every offseason. Deontay, well, has an expiring contract, and we'll see, how that fits in with what we're going to do going forward. Those are conversations that John and I'll have, but, he was fun to coach. He was, did a nice job for us, and certainly, made the best of his opportunity.
Is there any evaluation, and you look at an NFL record number of players used due to injury, do you look at that and say, that's just an anomaly of a weird year, or is that some level of concern as you evaluate what you want to do moving forward?
Concern for what?
How do you do
playing pro football, playing pro football, and having guys get hurt. Sure, then. I mean, I don't know what who do you want me to fire? Based, we had 91 guys. I'm just curious.
I'm not asking you to fire.
Okay, because that's always the rhetoric. Listen, we feel like sometimes the rules may force you into a little bit of, using the 3-week IR, where maybe in the past you wouldn't have put a guy on 3-week IR. So sometimes I think those get skewed with COVID. And, yeah, we had injuries. And we used 91 guys, like you said. But, I just didn't see anything, at least right now, and we'll identify, whether training camp is too long. We try to build in recovery days or regen days. And, when guys come back in May, we don't have them year-round. There's no mat drills next Tuesday. I mean, we didn't lose our bowl game, and then there's mat drills at 6 o'clock in the morning. Some of these guys may come back in June, So our job is to evaluate what their conditioning level is, making sure that when they go out there, they can protect themselves and they can finish a practice, and making sure that we're doing everything we can based on the guy's age and, how many snaps he played and a lot of things. But it is a long season. It's a long season with training camp is, and that break between the last game and the first regular season game that we were conscious of, and the bye week being late. So we had a lot of walkthrough practices, and we're gonna look at all that stuff, but I just don't know what the magic recipe is to avoid, some of the injuries or guys getting COVID.
Talked about guys.
Mike Vrabel's going to continue to talk to the media. Who do you want me to fire, he says.
What if he just responded, well, for starters,
Todd Downing.
He just started naming names.
I mean, just, man. I feel like there's not a lot of people who listen to that press conference who feel satisfied with how their head coach is receiving things versus how they are. But here's what I'll say, and we'll talk about it coming up next, because there's a few open phone lines. Not many. 615-737-1045. That's the number. We're going to take your phone calls on what Mike Vrabel had to say coming up next. And I'll tell you how I feel about what he had to say about Todd Downing, because at this point, it's got some 2020 vibes. That's next. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. People want us to be angry, Lucas. I got people in the YouTube chat after Mike Vrabel's press conference. By the way, he's still speaking, but I think you get the gist. He's asked about Todd Downing, and he, in fact, he's just wrapped up. And he gave you basically the same answer as he did when he was asked about Shane Bowen's job potentially being in jeopardy after last season with that terrible Titans defense. Titans offense not as bad as that Titans defense was, but Mike Vrabel said, yeah, he thinks Todd Downing's a great coach. And he thinks Todd Downing does a good job communicating with the players. And he explained the interception, some of the misguided play designs that may have led to some of those turnovers yesterday. As you know, on the first one being max protection with their no route concept on the backside to draw the safety's attention. He explained it quite at length. And people are angry that we're not angry. Now, I get why you're angry. You're supposed to be. You should be. But like Eddie Gray says, are y'all going to let this fly about the idea that, you know, we're worried about losing our access or people aren't asking Mike Vrabel tough enough questions? But I think that's just a fundamental misunderstanding of what our job is. My job is not to ask angry questions. My job is to ask him questions that you're angry about, and his responses are his responses. Now, can he be pushed? Yeah, he was pushed a little bit about Todd Downing and how much different Ryan Tannehill looks from Arthur Smith to Todd Downing, and you know what his response was? Arthur Smith coaches for the Falcons on the 91 players for injuries. Mike Vrabel wants to know, who do you want him to fire? Now, it would have been funny if Steve Lehman came back with a list of people that he wanted Mike Vrabel to fire, but, you know, that's just not the case. New York media, Philadelphia media is sometimes the comparison, I guess, because, you know, there's a lot more angry people in New York and Philadelphia. Questions asked, questions answered. We move on, and we react to it as such. But the biggest takeaway is that that was an endorsement of Todd Downing. And I asked you guys the question on social media, do you believe Todd Downing this season to be 2020 Shane Bowen, where Mike Vrabel continues to be loyal to him and, you know, second chances are given? In the case of Shane Bowen, it paid dividends. The Todd Downing situation, from my standpoint, feels much, much different. 615-737-1045. Back to the phone lines. They are loaded. We got Dave in Portland, Tennessee, who wants to weigh in. What's up, Dave?
Hey, what's going on, Buck?
What you got for me?
Hey, I don't want to seem like I'm bashing players or bashing the coaches or anything like that.
You can do what you want today, Dave. It's your call.
Yes, sir. All my teams are underdog teams, so I appreciate a loyal fan base. But we have to tell the truth and be honest, right?
Sure.
The last couple weeks, all I've heard from you guys and professionals on ESPN and whatnot, playoff football is different football.
Yes.
It's not like the regular season. It's championship football. It's elite football. It's the best of the best. The Titans' offensive game plan and the play calling and the play design is not elite. Not even close to championship football. They need to reboot the offense, bring in a new OC, and reconstruct the offense completely different. If you look at Cincy, if you look at Buffalo, if you look at KC, you look at these teams, RPO, spread, explosive offense, being able to move the ball down the field. The Titans do none of that offensively. It's play action. It's running the ball. You know, halfback dive. How many times they run halfback dive?
Hey, Dave, but the run game was working. Did you see the pass Ryan Tannehill fit in there to A.J. Brown? Cincinnati was not that much better than the Titans were on offense. You got the plays you needed to win the game. The difference was the three turnovers. The play calling in that situation is what stands out to me. They had 45-yard runs. They had a 40-yard bomb. They had a couple of 40-yard deep passing plays to A.J. Brown. I think we're talking about something fundamentally different here.
Yeah, but, Burrow was able to make those throws, though.
Tannehill made him too. He just threw three picks. What, Dave? I think
he threw it to the wrong team.
Sure, but are we not talking about them making enough plays offensively and the play calling situation in the red zone where Ryan Tannehill leads the league with four interceptions right now? Is that not the only difference? Because your point, you move the goalposts on me, Dave, and you're allowed to be honest if that's your honest opinion, and I'm honestly telling you that your opinion is flawed. You can't move the goalpost on me and say, we need more of these explosive plays, when, by the way, you had explosive plays. I got my handy-dandy play call sheet. I know this is an audio medium, but we're on video, too, so you can hear me rustling my papers, my handy-dandy stat book that Titans PR provides to us after the game. Let me give you the longest plays for the Tennessee Titans. You've got Deontay Foreman with the longest play of the game to set up first and goal from the 9-yard line with a 45-yard run after three good Derrick Henry runs to set that up. 45 yards to Deontay Foreman down the field. What happens on first and goal from the 9, Dave? You throw a pick, because instead of taking the open running lane to Deontay Foreman, there's a blitz coming. Ryan Tannehill correctly diagnoses it. In fact, can we hear from Ryan Tannehill, Lucas, on the second interception? Because I'll let Tannehill diagnose this for himself. Ryan Tannehill's playing by his game rules. The questionable part of that was the play call. I've got 45 yards to Deontay Foreman. I got 41 yards to A.J. Brown. I got a 40-yard pass to A.J. Brown. I got a 33-yard pass to A.J. Brown. I got a 20-yard pass to A.J. Brown. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 explosive plays, 20-plus yards or more down the field. One of them for a touchdown. What are you talking about, this lack of explosive plays? You want to know how many plays Cincinnati had over 20 yards? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's a situation where I think that you have misdiagnosed the problem. The problem, as Mike Vrabel outlined it, again, I wrote this at AtoZSports.com. Mike Vrabel said it as cleanly, as concisely as you could say it in the post-game press conference with us on Saturday night. Quote, our third down conversion wasn't good enough. Our ability to score touchdowns in the red zone was not good enough. But we all have to play better. We have to coach better. You've heard that a million times. Guess what? 1 of 8 on third down, 12%. That is abysmal. In the red zone, Ryan Tannehill, interception. Can't happen. On the first play of the football game, because you're trying to max protect, there's no route to pull the safety back. Interception. In the final seconds, just about 30 to be exact, you come out with a 3rd and 5 passing play where there is Anthony Firkser open underneath, but he's well short of the sticks, well short of the line to gain, and 3 deep passing concepts that Ryan Tannehill has to force a ball into to Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, who, by the way, as Bob pointed out earlier with one of his phone calls, hit off, bounced off his hands, went up in the air, tip drill interception. Situational play calling and execution by the quarterback, not good enough. But you cannot tell me their performance in the red zone and the fact that they were 1 of 8 on third down, that ultimately comes down to a player not being put in a good enough position to succeed. That's not questionable at this point. Matt is in Antioch up next on 104.5 The Zone. What's up, Matt?
Hey, how you doing? Well, I'm glad Dave had a call before me. I think it's a combination of everything. And you're not going to like this. I know Titans fans are not going to like this. But the Tennessee Titans were in a particular position when they got Tannehill and Vrabel.
Yep.
Now the problem is these two have moved the organization forward.
Yep.
There is sometimes that these two people cannot move their franchise further. Case in point, the Los Angeles Lakers in 1998, what did they do? They go and get Phil Jackson, and they win 3 in a row. So my point is, maybe it's time to look at, well, and then two, is it feasible? Who is better than the coach, and who can they get for quarterback? But what I'm saying is, you've had two, it doesn't matter what you do in the regular season.
Correct.
When you get to the playoffs, you have to win. And if you cannot beat, if your teams cannot beat the ones who are in the playoffs, then how good are you? So my point is continue to get better. Stop with all these expectations. They have, instead of changing the OC, they need to change the routes. Look at what Kansas City's doing to get down the field. Look what Buffalo is doing to get down the field. Look what the Rams are doing to get down the field. And and just one more point. When you said you had six offensive plays and that's good enough, no, sir. That's not good enough because KC had 30 of them, it seems like.
Okay, and well, how many did they – wait a minute, Matt. You can't just throw out numbers. Okay. You cannot tell me. Because that game went to overtime. So you're talking about additional time for both of those teams to make plays right down the field. You can't tell me, you can't toss out a number without bringing me actual numbers. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that's a fair way to do the analysis.
Okay. Okay. Let me tell you this much. Instead of the 30, let's say how all year long KC got down the field. All year long, the Rams got down the field. And they moved it in chunks. Buffalo moved in chunks. Green Bay somewhat moved it in chunks. But Tennessee doesn't. They have Derrick Henry that they'll ride. I got it. But sometimes you got to have an offense to move this ball because sometimes you're going to play harder competition to stop the run. And if you don't have the particular routes to do that, you're going to have this situation.
Hey, Matt, hang with me for a second because I've got their stat report up from KC and Buffalo. Kansas City did have 10, but Buffalo, you had more explosive plays than the Buffalo Bills. They had 1, 2, 3, 4 to your 6 on Saturday. You're talking about lack of explosive plays during the season, but you just told me that the regular season doesn't matter. I'm willing to agree with you in that respect, but we've just spent all season talking about the fact that they don't have the personnel to get down the field, but now we're doing the analysis in retrospect. I think that is deep, deep recency bias, no?
Well, I will tell you this much. You got Antonio Brown and you got Julio Jones.
You got AJ Brown. You don't want Antonio.
AJ Brown. I'm sorry.
You don't want
I'm
Antonio.
Sorry. But these guys are beasts on the outside. But with the routes that they run, they're not being used effectively. You would have more.
Thanks for the call, Matt. I appreciate that. We've got a lot more people on the phone line. Sorry to cut you off, Matt. But 615-737-1045. I think people are moving the goalposts. I really do. Now, I don't disagree with them that the route concepts are flawed. I don't disagree with that at all. And in fact, that's my whole point. We're going to go through this in 20 minutes with Harry Douglas of ESPN, former Titans wide receiver. He was in town all weekend. Me and Harry were texting about this back and forth vigorously. And the discussion at 12:20 when Harry joins us will be lively. We'll dive into Todd Downing there in more detail. Let's get one more phone call. We've got plenty of phone calls to get to, but I want to get one more before we have to take a quick break here. Let's go to Kyle in Savannah up next. What's up, Kyle?
Oh, hey, how's it going? Buck, I love you guys. All right, I'll try to make it as quick as I can. Point, and then I have a question to answer. So, point, I brought it up with Jamar and Ramon about how the split for blame should go 50 to OC, 40 to Tannehill, and then 10 to Vrabel. The 10, I give 5% for the first half and not kick an extra point. And then the 5% that at the end of the game, he didn't call a timeout, which he had 2 in his pocket.
Yeah, the timeout thing was weird. We'll, you know, agree to disagree on the 2-point conversion. I think, you know, given the penalty, they could have gone for it.
Yeah, that's fine. And then also fans are crazy that they want to mortgage their future like the Rams did, yet the Rams haven't won a Super Bowl yet with Matt Stafford. But anyway, that was something I'll just add. But my question is, who do you feel worse for? What player do you feel worse for in this game? And my answer is Deontay Foreman. Oh, my God. I feel so bad for that dude. And the fact is, like, if he's coming back next year, I would basically stipulate, like, if I was him, I'd be like, if Todd Downing is still here, I do not want to be here. Because Todd Downing, oh, my God. Like, throw him in the trash already. They should be announcing that at 3 o'clock where they do injuries. Announce that Todd Downing's gone. Please, just get him off. Get him out of here, please.
Thanks for the call, Kyle. He's begging with, pleading with us even. Yeah, that's not happening. Mike Vrabel said he's a great coach. So he's your OC. I'll tell you, he asked me who I feel worse for after that game. You're going to hear from the player that I feel the worst for after yesterday's game. That's coming up next. Harry Douglas is going to join us at 12:20. Phone lines are locked and loaded. If you want to get them in, 615-737-1045. We've got a lot more reacting to do on this Monday. I'm Buck Rising. It's 1045 The Zone.
Burrow with Evans in the backfield. Takes the snap. Pressure coming up the middle. Sack! They get him again!
Welcome back. It's Mike Keith. Losing his mind. 9 times he did that. Probably a few more, again, as we said.
11 times.
11 times, but a couple of those were wiped off by some late whistles by the officials. I was asked in the last break, welcome back, Buck Rising here with you until 1. Which Titans player I felt worse for after that loss. I felt worse for that, I mean, for that entire defense. And by the way, Bud Dupree, Kevin Byard, they're meeting with the media right now on locker room cleanout day. Byard said he would restructure his contract to get Harold Landry back. Bud Dupree is saying he absolutely advocates for Harold Landry return. All that is well and good, recall, because Roger Saffold said the same kind of a thing last season. But in order for them to restructure, they have to be asked to do that. John Robinson has to make the conscious decision to ask them to do that. And you'll remember that the Tannehill Julio Jones thing was so unique because John doesn't like doing that. Now, maybe this season has changed his philosophy. I don't know. But just because those words are out there doesn't mean that's Kevin Byard saying, I'm going to restructure my contract. He's saying, yeah, I'd do it if I was approached. Somebody has to approach him. You know who I feel worse for than anybody on Saturday, though, for the way that that was blown? And I love you guys, but it's not you. It's Jeffrey Simmons. Let's have Jeffrey Simmons talk about how shocked he was to have to get up there in front of us on Saturday night and talk about them blowing that game.
I mean, our goal was to go to the Super Bowl and win. Of course, we short of our goal. Like I said, you know, in order for to continue to play in February, we're supposed to have been taking care of this game. So it happened we didn't. So, like I said, that just props to them. Get it all up, props to them. You know, like I said, they made more plays than us. I tell you what, though, we're gonna let this build. We're gonna build off this, and I hate this feeling. So, whatever I could do as a leader, as a captain on this team, you know, to get the guys, you know, going more and coming in for the next season, you know, I'm trying not to have this feeling again. So.
Try not to have that feeling again, but they're going to have to wait until next year. That's Jeffrey Simmons talking about the way that that game was lost, despite him being just an unholy terror for 60 minutes of football. Let's finish strong. We've got plenty more calls to get to. Lines are loaded, but I want to get this segment off with a good one. I want Lebowski because I know he's going to deliver. How you feeling, big man?
Okay, so this is the most pissed off and disappointed I've been in 22 years watching this team. A lot of people say the opposite of love is hate, and it's not. The opposite of love is apathy. When you stop giving a damn to what your former lover, ex, or football team is doing, that's when things are not going well, and that's exactly how I feel. It ruined my football weekend. I absolutely could care less who played games after that. And here's why I'm so irritated. To quote Jonathan Bourne with us at Broadway, Titans had all projected starters coming in, plus Zach Cunningham. You're at home. Henry is fresh. You're coming off a bye. And let me say that's 2 bye weeks in the final 6 weeks of play. And that's the offensive performance. That's the interceptions that Tannehill decides to throw up. And to me, it's more sickening because you've got A.J. Brown at full speed. Julio seems to be in a rhythm and healthy. The defense playing out of their minds, and this Titans offense just wasted a legit Super Bowl caliber defense. I would have been okay with losing in the AFC Championship round to a team like Kansas City, but Cincinnati barely played enough offense to beat the Titans, and the Titans only beat themselves. And unfortunately, now what? What do you do? First off, for fans that are talking about we've got to replace the quarterback now, for who? And what? And with what money? With what picks? What are teams going to ask for to replace them? You need to align yourself with the fact that this team is going to run it back with both Todd Downing and Ryan Tannehill. It's not going to be out of incompetence, at least on the quarterback side. It's going to be straight up for funding lack of talent out there, both in the draft and in free agency. But I'm just having trouble wrapping my mind around how do you put yourself in this position again? First round bye, two byes in the last few weeks of play with full health coming in. You can't gamble on that going forward in the NFL, especially with a small Super Bowl window. Chances for the Titans or any team to get back in a position like that at full health are slim to none. And I'm furious. It makes me just not want to watch football through the Super Bowl. And I just don't know where to go from here. I'm going to articulate it more on the podcast at some point, but I'm just disgusted. And I'm going to have to hang up now before I cry.
I love you, buddy.
I can hear it breaking there towards the end. I heard him breaking a little bit.
The podcast, by the way, that he's referencing is Football and Other F-Words, wherever it is that you get your podcast. Lebowski does that fine football program that will be must-listen.
Gonna hang up before I cry.
Yeah, yeah. Hell, hold it in there, big man. Keep it together, bud. Speaks for a lot of people today. You know when the last time the Titans had a first-round bye as the number one overall seed? 14 years. 14 years. Lucas, where were you in 2008?
2008, I was rocking in seventh grade.
Yep, I would have been a freshman in high school. 2008. It's a long time. It's a golden opportunity. They blew it. We're going to talk about how they blew it coming up next. And Harry Douglas of ESPN, former Titans wide receiver, is going to give us some X's and O's analysis on this game specifically, because today is the day to express what Lebowski just expressed. Disgust, disappointment. Tomorrow begins the process of putting this thing back together. But for the next hour, we got you. 615-737-1045. That's coming up next. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.